Back on Get Up, and I just want to remind everyone that 6 years ago today, we had a moment that no one should ever forget. 50 Cent throwing out the first pitch at Citi Field. And not particularly well. That, you know, in the annals of really bad first pitches, that's got to be right up there. I mean, that's so bad, it's almost impossible to put it into words. That's such a bad first pitch that other bad first pitches are insulted by being lumped in with it. And I would describe it as just a stunning moment, but one that certainly felt worth reliving for a little bit of a smile. We have a huge hour coming your way on Get Up, and it starts right now. Jalen Rose and Doris Burke are standing by, and they are ready to go because it's time to get up with one NBA superstar who wants to sit down if his team can't win at all. Is he alone, and is he right? We'll answer those questions. Then, these young quarterbacks have serious problems to deal with. Our quarterback has the solutions. Orlovsky on deck, Baker, and much, much more. And then, Michael Jordan on tape says exactly what we thought, once and for all, actually happened with Isaiah Thomas and the Dream Team. You'll hear it in this hour of Get Up, which starts right now with Get Up and Go. We're in the NFL. Dolphins owner Stephen Ross told CNBC yesterday he thinks there, quote, definitely will be a football season this year. He also said his team is planning on having fans in the stadium, at least as of now. Meanwhile, in New Jersey, the governor, Phil Murphy, has lifted restrictions on professional sports in that state, setting the stage for, among other things, the Giants and Jets to be able to host training camps at their facilities this summer. Hockey, NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman announced yesterday the league will forego the remainder of its regular season and jump straight into a 2014 playoff if they're able to resume play this summer. Postseason games are expected to be played in two hub cities, with one for each conference. They've not named those yet. Here's how it will look. Five rounds will be the structure for the playoff format. The qualifying round will see teams 5 through 12 facing off in a best of five. The top four seeds will play in a round robin to figure out the seeding. The first and second rounds are figured out here, depending on timing, how long those will be. But once they're down to the final four, the conference finals and Stanley Cup final will be a best of seven. The announcement was well handled yesterday. Now to the NBA, where they are still working through potential scenarios for what their season will look like if and when it is able to resume play. All-star Damian Lillard's Portland Trailblazers are currently in ninth in the West. They're 3.5 games out of the final playoff spot. And he had some interesting comments yesterday. He told Yahoo Sports, quote, if we come back and they're just like, we're adding a few games to finish the regular season and they're throwing us out there for meaningless games and we don't have a true opportunity to get into the playoffs, I'm going to be with my team because I'm a part of the team. But I'm not going to be participating. I'm telling you that right now. We brought this up with Adrian Wojnarowski an hour ago here on Get Up.
They want the key players on the court. And to do that, they've got to create a scenario here where a team like Portland, who's only 3.5 games back from the eighth seed in the West, along with a couple other teams, that they'll have an ability to get to the playoffs. And whether that's in a play-in tournament or a pool play scenario, in addition to regular season games, that's going to be a motivator for teams to put their key players back on the floor.
His first comment, he said Adam Silver has heard what Damian Lillard said from a lot of people over the course of time. And if you're just joining us, Doris Burke has been with us all morning long. And here's Jalen Rose ready to go as well. Jalen, what did you think of what Damian Lillard said?
I'm not surprised at all, Greeny, and that's why as we broached this topic recently, I was trying to come up with scenarios based on a lot of the speculation that we heard that I felt like would actually get majority, more fan bases involved and more players involved. That's why I gave you those four reasons, four items that I feel like the NBA should institute if they plan on bringing back basketball this year. One, 20 teams. So now all of a sudden you have the lower third, 21 through 30, y'all go home. Congratulations, y'all had this great season. Y'all in the lottery, cool. The next thing, 7 through 10 playoff. For what Dame Lillard just said, look at the West. Look at the bottom of the West standings. You got Luka. You got Ja. You got Dame. You got Zion. You got to find a way to have them create some enthusiasm to bring back the league and see who's going to be in the playoffs. This is not going to be chalk this year. A squad like the Portland Trailblazers, I told you, could get in the first round and mess around and beat the Clippers or the Lakers. We don't know. And then lastly, every series has to be 7 games. So don't be surprised if you start to hear players say more of what Dame said. And I want to make sure I do a distinction. This is not what Blake Snell and Bryce Harper said in baseball. They're vastly different. They were talking about the fact if their money wasn't right, they would not play. This is a professional who understands that this is my job. And therefore, if I have an opportunity to further our goals, then I'm all in. But for me to fly all the way from Portland to Florida, it has to be a reason for me to go out there on the court and risk my health, physically playing basketball, but also clearly during the coronavirus pandemic that we're dealing with.
Yes, correct. That's an important distinction, and you're right. He didn't say anything about money. There haven't been any conversations, to our knowledge. It's certainly not airing the dirty laundry in basketball the way they did. Doris, you spoke very eloquently about this earlier. So let me ask you an unrelated question while I have you. Because I brought this up the other day. Jalen is very much on my side, and a lot of other people are as well, as we figure out how they're going to do these playoffs. I like Jalen's idea of a little play-in. However you do it, ultimately you're going to arrive at 16 teams. For the longest time, I've wanted to see the best teams wind up in the finals. And I've had Adam Silver and many others tell me travel considerations are the reason that they continue to break it up between the East and the West. Well, that isn't an issue if everybody's at Disney World. So in your mind, does this feel like a good opportunity for them to see the teams 1 through 16, play it out that way, and see how it works? And maybe it's something they decide they like enough to keep it.
Well, the only team that would have an objection to that probably is the Milwaukee Bucks. And I do believe it is the time to try it. Why not? Right? 1 through 16, because travel is no longer part of the equation. I just want to go because I thought Jalen was eloquent there himself. And I told you in the first hour, Mike, that I believe because the primary consideration here should be minimizing risk while getting some resolution to the season. When I read yesterday about potential pool play, I would not go beyond 20. It gives you a couple of advantages. It gives you, number one, you know, drama, excitement, and certainly more games, more revenue. And all of the players Jalen mentioned who have potential to play, Dame, Zion, et cetera, they would be in the mix. The downside of that is you're essentially saying the 75 to 80% of the season we've already played, throw it out the window. And if I'm the Lakers, Clippers, and Bucks, I'm not happy about that. These are complex issues. But if it, in fact, it's the 16 teams, I love the idea as a one-off because the Eastern Conference owners will never vote for it long-term. As a one-off, let's go 1 through 16 seeding. 100% agree with you.
Jalen, go ahead.
I totally agree with both of you guys because here's the thing. We have to drum up enthusiasm for the start of the league, and you want as many players and as many fan bases engaged as possible. People are starving for sports. When it returns, now you need some storylines. We know LeBron James is going to be there. The Clippers are going to be there. You mentioned the Bucks, DB. Giannis is going to be there. But the key to selling this thing is to get as many people as possible. And things like tournaments and pool play and the big names that I just mentioned, that creates a level of enthusiasm for the return and ultimately becomes your red carpet as you start the playoffs.
Very quickly, because I was on First Take yesterday and they asked me this question to open up the show. Doris, I will leave it with you on this today. In your mind, Lakers, Clippers have been at the top of the West all year long. Bucks at the top of the East all year long. Who's the team to beat when they come, if and when they come back, and we all get to see this unprecedented sort of mad dash in Orlando this summer, who's the favorite?
I'm going with LeBron James and the Lakers.
And because?
Because I think you need a driving force who's been there and done that and overcome every possible scenario and circumstance. And who has faced more adversity, more situations in the playoffs than LeBron James? The answer to that question is no one.
Jalen?
I agree with DB, the Lakers. And we know about the MVP level play of LeBron James, but I think the difference maker, however, will be Anthony Davis up front. If you look at the landscape of the league, there aren't too many 6'11", 7-foot guys that can deal with Anthony Davis and his improved three-point shooting and what he can do on the post and in the paint.
All right, Jalen's coming back a little bit later in the program. Doris, it is a delight, as always, to see you. Continue to be well, and we'll see you soon. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
Okay, that's Doris Burke with us here this morning. Again, Jalen is coming back, but Jalen brought up the situation with baseball. Yesterday was not their best day. Major League Baseball's owners issued a financial proposal yesterday, proposed a marginal salary structure that would see the lowest paid players in baseball receiving close to a full share of their prorated salary, but the game's stars receive far less than expected. And if you follow Jeff Passan on Twitter, you saw him posting all of these numbers. Here's a breakdown. A player making the league minimum of $563,000 would have a prorated salary of half that amount. Baseball would request about an additional 10% cut, and then the salary would be set. A player making $30 million would be requested to take an additional 50% pay cut after already getting down to the prorated figure. There are a lot of numbers that were being thrown around about this yesterday, Jeff. And, you know, I think it frustrated a lot of people because here we are in the other sports. They're talking about how badly they want to come back and play. And in baseball, they're airing a lot of their dirty financial laundry. Okay, that's out there. What happens now?
What happens now, Greeny, is that we see what the players really want. The ball is in their court now. And I think the advantage is theirs, too, because when you get a proposal as seemingly lopsided as this, you know, there have been some, I wouldn't say a fractious players association, but there have certainly been some people who have been in a more moderate wing of that party. And that moderate wing said, let's get a deal done. Let's compromise. Let's get together with the other side and ensure we have baseball this year. After yesterday and after that proposal, Greeny, the moderates are on the side of the hardliners now. And they really believe that they have to take a fight back to the owners to essentially say, we're not going to take a proposal like this even seriously at this point.
And so what does that mean? That doesn't sound like good news to me if our ultimate goal here is to have baseball this summer.
You know what it is, Greeny? It's the beginning of a contentious negotiation. And that's what we have to remember throughout this whole thing. I've been trying to preach patience because ultimately, it still behooves both parties for there to be baseball. And that has been the overriding and guiding principle I've seen from the start. Now, I will fully admit and acknowledge the same thing was the case back in 1994. And any comparison to 1994 is a really problematic thing because we lost the World Series that year and baseball changed forever that year. But I would like to believe that rational people have learned from their mistakes and that losing baseball in 2020, as the NHL is going on, as the NBA is going on, as the NFL is going on, as all of these sports are going on during baseball's prime moments, would be absolutely deleterious for the sport, short and long term, and that both sides recognize that enough where they're going to figure out this mess and get baseball back on the field this year.
We will root for that to be right because I agree. There's a lot of words I could put in there. Devastating, catastrophic, and almost any word you want to attach to the impact that I think it would have on the sport long term and short. Jeff, we'll continue to follow you as this thing continues to develop. Okay, just setting the table for what's going to be a very busy hour. Coming up, not much expected from Matthew Stafford's Lions or Matt Ryan's Falcons. Right? Wrong. Dan Orlovsky will tell us why fans of those teams should have a lot of hope. And then it became clear during Last Dance there was no love lost between MJ and Isaiah. Did that keep Isaiah off the dream team? Once and for all, the answer next.
It's your home speaking, and I need you to do me a couple of favors. First, could you get that blueberry that rolled under the fridge last week? It's throwing my feng shui off. Second thing, bundle your home and car insurance with GEICO. It's easy, and we could save money. Lastly, I know you were thinking of painting the nursery back to off-white, but I'm actually feeling this baby blue. Didn't think it was my color, but I am pulling it off.
GEICO. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
I have never bet on sports. I'm going to give some advice right now. The Lions winning more than 6.5 games this year. We drafted Swift We drafted Okuda. We got Galladay. The Lions making the playoffs this year. Producer Pete McComber, please bring me on to talk about football. Lions, Greeny, rah!
That was how we ended yesterday's program here yesterday with Jalen Rose, making his case that his beloved Detroit Lions are A, going to have a better record than my Jets, and B, that they're going to make the playoffs. Let's start with the second part of that. Dan Orlovsky, you're still a Lion in your heart and your soul. Are the Lions making the playoffs this year?
Yes. I actually thought the Lions were going to make the playoffs last year, and they were a 3-4 football team with Matthew Stafford healthy, and he was playing really kind of MVP type of football. Now, Okuda's got to step in and be Darius Slay. He's got to be lockdown corner. And Jalen's right. I love the addition of DeAndre Swift. I expect them to use DeAndre Swift like the Saints use Alvin Kamara. But that defense has to play better, Jalen. Like, if that defense is in the 30s again, they won't make the playoffs. But if they play average football defensively, that's going to be in Detroit a top five, top seven offense with a healthy Matthew Stafford. That division has some question marks. I'm going to say my Detroit Lions are going to make the playoffs.
Okay. So they're Jalen's Lions and they're Orlovsky's Lions. Dominique, what do you think?
I feel like I understand their perspective, and he's right about Matthew Stafford, but they are still the Lions. So let's not get all our hopes up. Their defense has not improved substantially from a talent level, so I can't imagine their defense is going to get that much better. And that division, I agree, is not as strong as you would want it to be. The regression of the Bears' defense and also the concern on their offense around the quarterback situation. But my big question at division is, how much faith can you possibly have in the Vikings there after they lost their starting corners? I do think the Vikings, though, are a more talented overall team than the Lions and probably a better coach team. So I'm not sure that they're going to get past all that. And I haven't even mentioned Aaron Rodgers. So the division isn't that tough, but neither are the Lions. So I'm not putting any money on it. I know Jalen's never bet on sports, and neither have I. I'm not going to start by putting on the Lions to make the playoffs.
Disrespecting the Lions, bro.
Now, Jalen, we did not have a lot of time yesterday when this came up. But you and I are going to make the wager this year, the suit bet that got canceled, you know, in the NBA. The Jets versus the Lions.
Canceled.
It's canceled. It's canceled because the season did not get to go to a conclusion. And so the Pelicans, I believe, would have made the playoffs had they had the opportunity to. And unfortunately, the circumstances were that our suit bet got, let's call it, postponed to the NFL season. I believe the Jets will have a better record than the Lions.
Greeny, bets don't work like that, sir. That's not how bets work. You lost.
I'm with Jalen. No, if they have their playoffs and they're not in it, pay up.
If the NBA resumes,
no way.
And playoffs happen, and Zion Williamson isn't participating, you lost that bet.
So you're saying the suit
bet. Jay Williams.
You're saying the suit bet counts one way or the other. Okay, so then we'll go double or nothing. I'll throw in a vest. If you want to make it a three-piece suit, I'll throw in a pair of shoes. You are strongly in belief that the Lions will have a better record than the Jets this year?
I'm not strongly believing that. I'm guaranteeing it. And I love Jamal Adams, by the way, and they need to take care of him before he end up somewhere else like Detroit or Tampa Bay. But with that being said, I believe our quarterback is better than yours. Our running game is better. Our wide receiving room is better. And Matthew Stafford's going to have a breakout season. I think when we start talking about top 10 quarterbacks, he's going to catapult himself firmly into that conversation. And I got to say something about the Packers, too. We talk so much about them drafting Jordan Love. And, you know, I watch every show every day, including this one. And people say time and time again that Aaron Rodgers don't have weapons. I've seen both of y'all say it. Both of y'all. Y'all say it every single day. Aaron Rodgers don't have weapons. I'm going to put, y'all need to put some respect on one name, Devin Funchess. That's who they picked up this offseason, who's going to also be a weapon for Aaron Rodgers. A team that won 13 games last year, five of those games, Greeny, backup quarterbacks. Don't sleep on my Lions. They got a chance to get in the playoffs.
Jalen, where did Funchess go to school?
I just know he went to school in Detroit in elementary.
Yeah, Yeah, okay, exactly.
Okay,
convenient
that wasn't planned.
That's the name you throw
Jalen,
out there.
Jalen, stay with me. We're coming back to do all the NBA stuff with you in just a minute. But Dan Orlovsky, I want you to fix some quarterback situations here, okay? We're going to play a little game. We're going to look at some young quarterbacks and what they need to improve. Daniel Jones, New York Giants, what's he need to improve?
He needs to improve his performance against zone defenses. He was great last year playing against man defense with his accuracy, but versus zone defense, 4 touchdowns, 9 interceptions, a QBR around 35. So needs to understand the defenses a little bit more and realize that those windows are smaller and they're going to close quicker. And I want to see a little bit of an uptick in his arm strength. That's really something that will show when 6 or 7 eyes are on you playing against the zone defense.
How about Baker Mayfield?
Baker Mayfield, the mechanics, the mechanics within the pocket. I want to see Baker sit in the pocket and display very, very good accuracy because that's the player that he is. When he gets outside of the pocket, he's a bad player, 36%. And as a passer rating, he needs to stay in the pocket and trust that the mechanics of that offense are going to allow him to excel as a quarterback. And then when we go to Dak Prescott needs to play better versus good defenses. Last year, playing against top 10 defenses, he was a bad quarterback, led his team to 0-5 record, and only scored 19 points per game against those top 10 defenses, and I think had something like 8 touchdowns and 6 interceptions. Dak is at that level where, especially when it comes to his contract, he's got to step up and play big-time football against top 10 defenses and stop kind of feeding on subpar defenses.
I'm not going to take the bait. You're not going to upset me. It's just disrespectful to put Dak in the conversation with those other guys. He's so much
prove
better.
Prove it wrong.
And your argument.
Prove it wrong.
Your argument. I will.
Just,
no problem. No
I
problem.
Just prove
I'll prove
it wrong.
Shh, stop it. Stop it. I'll prove it wrong easily. He was number 4 in QBR, which, as we both know, takes into consideration how good the defenders are. And this is Dak in the playoffs against the Seahawks, leading a game-winning drive. Dak Prescott is much better than all of those guys. And Dak Prescott, last year, his QBR against teams with over 500 records was better than Aaron Rodgers, was better than Brady, was better than Garoppolo. Dak Prescott, even in this conversation, is disrespectful. You're not going to upset me. I'm done with you.
They averaged 19 points a game.
I have to leave
not there.
Get my blood
19.
Pressure up.
I'm up against it. I got big
better.
Stuff coming. Guys, outstanding debate. We can continue this as we go. I have a feeling there'll be cause to. But coming up, before The Last Dance premiered, Michael Jordan feared how people would view him. Now those fears are being realized. We'll discuss it next.
Geico has the insurance industry leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you, like animal control when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
Geico, always there for you with savings and the industry leading mobile app.
We are back on Get Up, and yesterday was a very interesting day regarding that man. In The Last Dance, Michael Jordan said he had nothing to do with Isaiah Thomas not making the Dream Team in 92 in Barcelona. However, a recording from a podcast in 2011 resurfaced, and here's what Jordan said.
Rob Stone called and said, Rob, I won't play with Isaiah Thomas. Here's your, he said, you know what? Chuck that one, Isaiah. So Isaiah's not going to be a part of the team.
That got a lot of attention yesterday for a variety of reasons, including the fact that it seems to contradict what Michael himself said during The Last Dance. I want to play you 2 more things to set up the conversation. Rod Thorne, whom he was referring to, was basically the person in charge of selecting the team. He was on Golic and Wingo last month, and you'll hear he denied that Jordan had anything to do with it. We also had Isaiah Thomas on last month, right at the height of this. And I want to play a bit of that because you'll sense just how hurt he remains by being snubbed to this day. Let's play those.
There was never anything in my conversation with him that had to do with Isaiah Thomas, period. He said, I'll do it.
If I'm not a part of the Dream Team because, you know, a lapse in emotion in terms of not shaking someone's hand, if that's the reason why I didn't make the Dream Team, then I am more disappointed today than I was back then when I wasn't selected.
Okay, and so we are delighted to bring back Nick, bring back Jalen, and bring Matt Barnes
into the conversation here as well. Matt, great to see you, my man, and thank you for doing this. But, Jalen, let me start with you. Going all the way back to the beginning of the airing of Last Dance, Michael said that he was concerned that people's thought about him, the way they view him, might be impacted negatively by what they see. And now, particularly in light of yesterday, what do you think?
I think a lot of people got emotional about the documentary. For some, MJ was the greatest player. And then they saw how he behaved with his teammates and didn't love his leadership style. And now they flip and change it and say, oh, LeBron is the best player. Here's the thing. For anybody that's ever done a project, I've been fortunate enough to executive produce the Fab Five documentary and also a best-selling author. Anytime you're going to do a quality project, they're going to be heroes and they're going to be villains. And in this case, it was Krause, it was Pippen, it was Horace Grant. That's what it was. And MJ did not mind doing that to tell the story. So, yes, that's going to rub clearly his teammates the wrong way. And it's unfortunate that they had so much success, yet they don't have the relationship that we hope they've had. But that's what makes it an all-time great documentary. I saw the promotion for the Tom Brady documentary, and I can't front. I wasn't excited because I thought everything was going to be staged, unlike this one. So that's why it was a terrific project.
Let me bring up Isaiah, though, because in particular with regard to that, we've had sort of a he said, but now Michael Jordan is on both sides of a he said, he said. He said he didn't do it, and then he said in this podcast in 2011 that he did do it. So what are we supposed to make of that, Jalen?
Well, we always knew that wasn't true. Us Detroit natives stood on the table and screamed as loud for the whole world to hear us, but y'all was just ignoring us because we beat what everybody loved. That was MJ. That was Magic. That was Bird. We upset the apple cart. Those are three of the best seven basketball players to ever do it. And the Detroit Pistons had the nerve to be bad boys and win back-to-back championships in their era and not bow down and respect them? And so we felt as Detroit natives, like when it was our turn to celebrate, everybody was jealous and everybody was hating. And that's how I still feel to this day.
Matt Barnes, let me get you in here. I haven't had a chance to chat with you since even when the Michael Jordan documentary first started airing. So I'll give you the floor wherever you want to go. As you hear all this conversation, you know, you came into the league a little bit later and obviously it played a really long time. What is your perspective on the Michael Jordan that we have come to know now based on all of this?
It hasn't changed. You know, he's a competitor. You hear people crying today about his tactics or his motives wouldn't work and people wouldn't want to play with them. I think, Jalen, you brought this up a week or so ago. We go into the NBA to play, to win, to make as much money as we can while we can. If you happen to make friendships along the way, great. But if you don't, that's not our main objective. You know, we have plenty of friends outside of basketball. You know, if you're able to build a long-term relationship, I think that's amazing. But the goal is to win and make money, and they did it. You know what I mean? So there's always going to be casualties of war, unfortunately, with the few guys on the team that were depicted or betrayed maybe the way they didn't want to be. But, you know, when you're looking back that long, the story is going to change a little bit. It may not be as clear to you. I'm working on some documentaries right now, and I really have to do my research because I remember it one way. Then I read something, and it's a little bit different. So this was Jordan's piece. This was his time. We all waited for it, and I loved it. Like Jaden said, I think it's going to sweep the awards and award season for documentaries, and there's always going to be casualties of war when you're speaking on something like this.
I think that's an important point to make, just specifically with regard to the discrepancy between what Michael said 9 years ago and what he said in this. The substance of them, I think it is reasonable to say that the very specific words that were chosen in the conversation doesn't necessarily mean he was lying in the documentary. At least I'd like to give him the benefit of the doubt for that. One way or the other, I've never had any doubt that Michael Jordan was behind Isaiah Thomas not being on the Dream Team. Dominique, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. It didn't change my perception of Michael Jordan because my entire life that I was aware of this controversy, I always thought that Mike kept him off of the Dream Team. And then when Mike said he didn't or like hinted towards him not doing it in the documentary, that was the first 5 seconds that I thought maybe Mike didn't do it. And then I watched the rest of the documentary and saw how kind of petty, vindictive, and how Mike also enjoyed destroying people. As much as he wanted to win, he wanted to destroy anybody who was in his way. And this seemed like another opportunity for him to destroy someone who he saw as a competitor or a rival. So I always thought he did it. It seemed like he did do it. The documentary made me question it for a second, but these subsequent stories have kind of made me me go back to my original belief. It doesn't change anything that I feel about Michael Jordan, but I do think it's a sad, sad reality because this wasn't about him winning. I understand everyone can justify the way he treated his players, his teammates, because it won them championships. This wasn't about winning. This was about settling a grudge. And to all my research, not that I know everything about basketball by any stretch, it seems like this was the only thing that Isaiah did was not shake his hand after a game. And for that to carry on to him not getting to represent his country in on the Dream Team, like, that to me seems over the top.
Go ahead, Jalen.
That's not the only thing he did, Dominique. Everybody right. keep missing what I'm saying. What Isaiah Thomas did
right.
is he beat Michael Jordan two times more than Michael Jordan beat him when they played basketball from like 1986 to 1991.
Okay. I understand
they were like
that.
36 and 17.
That still doesn't justify to me. Like, that is no worse. Like, that doesn't. And I know Isaiah iced him out of his rookie All-Star game. Like, all that stuff, none of that, to me, justifies what Jordan did. If you're going to justify Jordan trash-talking his teammates and calling him all kinds of names and punching him. I'm just making sure we're on the same page. That's the only problem I had with it. It's not a justification.
It didn't justify it, and Matt hit on it a little bit. It didn't justify it. That's what rivalry is all about. Dislike, disdain, hate. I know you guys don't see it right now and don't understand it exists, but there's a reason why these guys are not friends and not getting along 30 years later when they're the top people to ever play basketball and they got more rings than all of us put together.
I'm with that. I'm going to leave it here.
That's the competitive spirit of the game.
I'm not going to be able to get to the thing I was going to do next because you just brought up an important point. Maybe what we should be saying today is if rivalries are never supposed to end, Matt Barnes, and I'm all with that. There's a part of me as a sports fan all my life that is just fine with Michael Jordan and Isaiah Thomas continuing not to like each other until the end of their lives. That's all good to me. That's what rivalry is about. But then should it have been up to Michael not to have Isaiah on the team? Isaiah Thomas belonged on that team. He's one of the greatest players of all time. He wasn't so far removed. He was no more removed from his prime than Larry Bird was, and they put Bird on that team. So I guess at the end of the day, should it have been up to Michael to make that decision? If there's some place to look for some criticism here, Matt Barnes, is it that?
I mean, if you look at it, I mean, we all know Isaiah was one of the top, 12, 14 guys in the world at that time, hands down. So he definitely should have been on the team. But then we also know, too, we're not naive to know that superstars are catered to, you know, and it was Mike's turn to take that front and center stage. As you watched not only that documentary, but other stuff about Magic and Bird, this was kind of the passing of the torch to this is about to be MJ's league. So if you want the greatest player that we didn't know, but possibly the greatest player of all time to play on a team, to lead a team, you're going to have to cater to him. So I think it's no secret that, you know, MJ had, you know, some hand or something to do with Isaiah not playing. But if you also take a step back and look at people's way to the top, being great, whether you're a CEO, a business, basketball, whatever, you're going to step on a lot of people heading up there. You're going to hurt a lot of feelings, and that's part of being great. That's a part of being a billionaire. That's a part of being a six-time champion. You're going to hurt a lot of feelings. You're going to break a lot of hearts, but that just is what it is. So if you ask Mike, would I do it over again or would I change anything, I doubt he would. You know, and not from a negative standpoint, when I make this next comment, but as far as the competitive nature, never getting a chance to play against Jordan or really even meet him. I met him one time. I saw a lot of the tenacity and win by any means in Kobe. Very similar. When I was watching stuff in practice, I got chills because I'm like, not in a bad way, but in a competitive way, Kobe would cuss you out. You saw Kobe get into it with players. Kobe would do anything he could to get the best out of his team because he knew on the biggest stage that's what was going to be needed. So, like I said, my first pointer when I first spoke, when people crying about, well, we don't like the – he's too this, he's too that. Throw all that out the window, man. At the end of the day, it's all about winning. Mike won at the highest level, and there's going to be some casualties of wars when that happens.
All right, I'm going to take a break here because I want to get to the Damian Lillard stuff. And Matt, we wanted to get to your stuff with the ring. So let's take a quick break. We'll bring this group back in just a moment. And we're going to talk about a variety of things, including Matt Barnes had these comments. He said he won an NBA title, but he doesn't feel like he earned the ring. What do our guys think? We're going to discuss that next. You're watching Get Up on ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul The 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
And as we've gotten to know Matt Barnes here on the program over the course of the last year, we know he's one of the most interesting people in sports. And he had some comments on his podcast, All the Smoke, that we thought were fascinating. He won a championship with the Golden State Warriors in 2017. But as we will show you here on his podcast, he had the following comments. He said, "I came in when Kevin Durant went down. I played a consistent 20 to 25 minutes. The game KD comes back, I get hurt maybe a week before the playoffs and I'm out of it. I got a free ride. I got a free ring. I didn't sweat. I didn't get to guard LeBron. I don't count that as a championship." And the good news is we have Matt Barnes with us this morning to get a little more into that, because I think it's a fascinating comment. And here we are, maybe the first ever get up five box as we put the entire crew together. But Matt, I'll start with you. When you say that, what do you mean when you say I don't count that as a championship?
Greeny, I just had, I mean, and it's detailed, I had a roller coaster ride, a blessing to be able to play as long as I played. I wasn't even supposed to make it. I made it, but nothing was ever handed to me. I took less money consistently to be on a team that contended and a team that won, because I figured when you win, everybody eats. So I had a few chances in my career to be on those type of teams, didn't get it done. You know, like I said, coming for KD, February, when he gets hurt, playing in the mix, and then the first game he comes back, I nearly break my ankle. So by the time that I'm feeling good enough to play, we're already 8-0 going into the Western Conference Finals. You know what I mean? So being a veteran player that I am, I knew that the rotation was going to stay what it was, and I just really didn't get a chance to get out there and play and sweat and go to work. Now, granted, I helped the guys prepare. I was a solid bet talking to other players when they were going through some stuff. But to me, nothing was ever handed to me. And I felt like that was handed to me. So I accepted it. I think there's a misconception that I didn't want the ring. I accepted the ring. There's a little story with that, why I don't have it right now. But I just don't count it as a championship.
Well, Jalen, what do you think of that? I want your perspective on that. What do you think?
So I've known Matt a long time. I remember playing at the UCLA men's gym when he and BD and those guys, when they were in college. And what I gather from his comments and what I've always known about his personality is that he's a straight shooter. And a lot of times people don't have a level of reality and self-awareness about themselves. That's what plays out in this commentary. Yes, I enjoyed the champagne. I appreciate the opportunity to be a part of the parade, love the teammates and coaches that I got a chance to do it with. But as a competitor, like he said, he didn't feel he got the sweat equity in order to feel like he was putting the ring on his finger and being proud of it. I felt the exact same way my final year in Phoenix. I thought I was going to sneak and get me a ring playing with Steve Nash and Amari Stoudemire. And that was the year when Robert Horry hip-checked Steve Nash into the bench. And about halfway through the year, when I realized that I was paying for more tickets per game than I was playing minutes, I wasn't as enthusiastic about winning the ring anymore. I would have taken it, but it wouldn't have felt the same if I would have won it with the Pacers, for example, when I was playing at a high level.
I get that. Again, obviously, I'm the only one in this conversation who never had a chance to try and win a ring in anything. But it feels to me as though, yes, I understand if you're Tom Brady, you might feel differently about the championship than the last guy on the bench. But there's ways in which you contributed. You were a part of the team to some degree, Matt. I guess what I'm saying is, if I won a championship, I sort of jokingly said, but only half jokingly, I would take that ring and I would make a necklace out of it and I would wear it every single day. And there's literally not a day of my life that I wouldn't want someone to see that I had that because I was an NBA champion. And so I just can't quite relate to what you're saying.
I mean, I get it and I understand it. But, you know, granted, you could say what you want to say about my career. There's skeptics and critics and whatever you want to say. But everywhere I went, I played. Whether I started, I was the first or second guy off the bench. I consistently played throughout my career. You know what I mean? So I always felt like I had a hand in what was going on, winning, losing, great game, bad game, whatever the situation may be. And, you know, for the first time, you know, outside of maybe my first 2 years in the NBA, I really felt like there was just, it wasn't about, you know, I was a teammate. And like I said, my body of work, you know, I earned a ring and everything I sacrificed, the money I sacrificed, I earned that ring. But when it came down to actually having to, you know, guard Kawhi in the playoffs and help guard us, Damian Lillard, guarding LeBron in the finals, these are all things that if healthy, I would have did. I wasn't healthy. You know, so I wasn't in rhythm. I wasn't in timing and I didn't get an opportunity to. So we can go back and forth all day about it. like Jalen said, I respect the Warriors for the utmost for giving me the opportunity. The best part about it was my twins were along for the ride. They got their rings. They were on center stage. You couldn't tell them that they weren't out there with Steph and KD. They were trying to hold the trophies and everything. So that was the best part about it, that my twins at the time were nine, got to experience that. And it'll always be something that's near and dear to my heart being on that team. But like I said, I just don't count it or talk about it or wear it.
I get it. I don't even want to go back and forth as much as I just find the psychology of it interesting from the standpoint of you guys being athletes. So, Dominique, let me come to you guys, the football players. When you hear this conversation, what do you think?
And I mean, it makes sense. I understand it. I think he, and again, you don't want to go back and forth with him if that's the way he feels. Anyone who's on that team deserves a ring because they contributed in some way. Like, that's the way that it works. Even, like, the media relations guy, like, everybody kind of gets a ring. But everyone knows it feels different. That's why assistant coaches go to become head coaches. And the rings that they win when they're assistant coaches are no more, or don't feel the same as they win one as a head coach. And it might feel different for a quarterback. Like, it makes sense. And I never played in a Super Bowl, but I do know that I felt a lot worse when I tore my ACL and I couldn't play and I was getting paid. Like, I'm not going to send that money back, just like Matt not going to send his ring back. But it didn't feel like I earned it in the same way. So I think it's human nature. It makes perfect sense to me. I think what Matt said about him feeling like he's not a champion or he didn't win that ring, like, I think that's where people feel uncomfortable, because you did add value throughout the course of the season and you added value as a veteran there. But if you don't feel like you earned it, then you don't feel like you earned it. I personally feel like I would love to have a ring from anywhere, whether I was on the team or not. I'm with you, Greeny. Give me a ring, please. I'll take it. I'll figure out whether I earned it or not later.
Dan, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, incredible amount of respect for Matt. I've met Matt once in studio. I don't know him that well, obviously, but a ton of respect for his decision. You know, we oftentimes in sports hear, like, the journey is greater than the destination. And I think this is just an example of that. Like, this is an example of Matt going, my career meant more than the ring. And what I accomplished meant more than just the ring. And I say this sometimes about my own career, and maybe I'm speaking for Matt, but, like, the only person who knew how hard it was to have that career is Matt. He's the only one who knows the sacrifice and the commitment it made and the things that he gave up and the diligence that he had to go through. And that means so much more to him, and certainly does to me, than ever getting the ring that you feel you didn't contribute to earning. And a lot of times, and I'm guilty of this, like, we look at ourselves in the hopes and thoughts of what we want to be, and we don't do enough of looking at ourselves of what we are and what we have done and what we have accomplished and celebrate that. And I think this is just an example of that. Like, Matt is incredibly comfortable in his own skin and what he accomplished. And he doesn't want to see himself in a wishful thinking type of mindset. He wants to celebrate what he is and what he accomplished. And so I get it. I actually would probably have a very similar mindset, and I respect the heck out of it.
Yeah, I want to make it clear, in case it's not, that this is not even something I think there is room to agree or disagree with. I think it's just, for those of us who didn't play, an interesting peek into the psychology.
I got an example for you,
Greeny,
that you appreciate.
Yeah.
How about this?
Yeah.
Carson Wentz don't feel the same about the Philadelphia championship ring as everybody else does. Do you think he likes showing up at work and there's a statue with his head coach and Nick Foles when he parks his car? He don't value that ring like that. But from now on, we're going to say Super Bowl champion Carson Wentz. How about that example?
It's an interesting one. It's not the exact same circumstance. Matt, it was your, but I agree with what you said. Right. That was different because he was the most important player on the team, and then he got hurt and they wound up winning it without him. Matt, I'll give you, it was all your idea in the first place. I'll give you the final word. What's the last thing you want to say about this?
I just thought it was an amazing time, an amazing opportunity. I think, Dan, you hit it on the head. You know, we were, you know, late round picks that had a hell of a journey, a blast, you know, a dream, that a life I couldn't dream of. You know, it's opened up several doors post-career. So I am very, you know, when I sit back and look at my career, I love the journey. I love the grind. I love the sweat equity I put into it. It just didn't end typically the way I wanted it to end, but it was still a dream come true.
That's really well done. Matt, I appreciate the honesty here. Again, I think this was just something that was an interesting glimpse into the psyche of a professional athlete and how he views something that most of the rest of us would think, oh my goodness, had to be the greatest experience of all time. Guys, thank you all for the thoughts on this as we continue. Very busy day here on ESPN is on the way. First Take is coming up next. Dak Prescott, Tom Brady, tons of football to get into with the quarterbacks. Who's under more pressure? They'll answer that question more on First Take in 5 minutes. on ESPN. We will have more Korean baseball for you tomorrow morning on ESPN2. The Samsung Lions taking on the Lotte Giants. That's tomorrow at 5:25 a.m. Eastern Time. You'll see it on ESPN2 and on the ESPN app. And I would like to quickly mention that I'm told that 4 o'clock Eastern today here on ESPN with Jalen and Jacoby, Damian Lillard will be their guest, and my understanding is he's going to be with them for the entirety of the show. They do 20 minutes at 4 o'clock Eastern Time this afternoon, and Dame Lillard would be there. Should be a very interesting conversation. We hope you'll enjoy that. We hope you enjoy the rest of your day. I'll see you tomorrow for Get Up. First Take starts now.